Mizmor LeDavid LeHaskir. This is a song composed by David LeHaskir. LeHaskir means to remind. Almost as if somebody said, I want people to understand what I went through. I'm putting this down as a memorial for myself. This Mizmor deals completely with his own suffering, with his own struggle, and with his sense of guilt. Now, we know that he felt terribly guilty about Bathsheba and what it is that he had done. He knows that he spilled blood. Granted, in the purpose of, you know, a battle. But by the way, when you go to battle, you kill. You come back with bloodstained hands. You're changed. You're not the same person that you once were. And whether they were guilty and they had it coming to you is not the issue. The fact of the matter is that you engage in this kind of violence and you bring out the animal in you, the beast in you. You understand? And that kind of, so these kinds of things tormented him in the latter part of his days. And this is what he's describing. This is really written at the end of his life. And it's almost like a message for future generations to remember him. And not to remember him only in his glory and his happy times, but to remember what he, as an individual, went through. And it starts out with a prayer. Hashem al beketzvecha tochicheini. Hashem, please don't reprove me in your fury. Now, I want to talk about a minute about the differences in these words for anger, because there's lots of words in Hebrew for anger. Ubechamatcha teasreini. And don't torture me in your anger. Malbim explains as follows. There's two words, af, charon af, and ketzef. Now, the word ketzef really means foam. You know when they say he foamed at the mouth? And af is actually, when people are very angry, you can see it on their nose. They actually flare, and you can see it, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, in Yiddish, there's a lot of expressions about the nose. When you want to say that somebody's walking around upset or perturbed, you say, was geist mit ein langer nose? Why do you have such a long nose? And there's a reason for that. Anybody who knows anything about art knows that when you're foreshadowing and you're trying to indicate that the head is down, you see this, you're seeing more nose and less chin. When you're happy, it's to lift your face. Everything goes up. You know the instant facelift? Yeah, and it does this. So that's called masopanim, lifting of the face, facelift. It's almost verbal. Think of it as, you know, you do a smiley face. Think of it as a smiley face and how you draw with words demeanor. We are showing demeanor by how it manifests itself. Ketzef is this foaming at the mouth, this anger, this rage, this storm that comes. And what is tochiach? Tochiach is to reprove. It means you're telling somebody, but in order to do what? In order to get him back on track. Its purpose is not punitive. Its purpose is to get him, to set him straight. That's what the concept of reprove means. But chema is much different. Cham means hot. Chema is not outwardly manifested. It is this rage that burns inside. And when it burns inside, no longer comes out. So you say, I'm mad at you. And I tell somebody why I'm mad at them. Because if you're mad at somebody, presumably you're going to talk about it in order to get them to change their behavior. When you've given up on them, you don't tell them you're angry. You're just holding it inside. And then comes the word teyasreini, which the Malvim says in this context means punishment. So I'm asking God to do the two things. Don't reprove me with your open anger, and with the hidden rage, don't punish me. Don't give up on me. And he's asking for both. Don't do both. Because I've been punished enough. You don't need to rub it in. Because what does he say? Kichitzecha nechetubi. Your arrows have all landed right in me. V'tinchat ala yadecha. And in fact, even your hand came down on me. What is he referring to? Sfono argues that your arrows landed in me is the fulfillment of Natan's prophecy. When David had sinned with Bathsheba and had her husband killed, and Natan, the prophet, came into the king and told him that remarkable parable about Kivsat Harash, about the little lamb that the poor man has. Now, David, who once had been a shepherd, really got this one. He said there was a poor little man, and all he had was this little lamb who he loved. And he raised it, treated it almost as a daughter, carried the little lamb in his bosom to keep her warm because she was motherless, and watched her grow. The rich man had a whole flock. He could have as many sheep as he wanted. But he saw the little man's lamb, and he had to take it away from him, which is what he did. And David, hearing, he says, what do you suppose his judgment should be? Ben mavetu! That was a capital crime. As far as he was concerned, he should die for doing something of this kind. And Natan turns to him and says, you're that thief. You could have all the women in the world that you wanted. Instead, you took away Uriah's wife. And David then said, he did not start justifying. He in fact said, you're right. I'm guilty. He says, what will happen? He says, the punishment has already come. And the punishment that was there, you can look at it in the second book of Samuel in the 12th chapter. The sword will never leave your house. And it didn't. Amnon and Tamar. Avshalom stood up in rebellion against him, tried to depose him, and actually tried to get his father killed. Adonijah arranged a coup d'etat. The kids were at each other's throats. There was no peace in his house. That's the arrows. Your arrows have already landed in me. And now your hand came down on me. She gave birth to that child. And that child became sick and died. And David was on the floor all night long crying for that baby. He says, I'm the guilty one, not him. Why is he suffering? That to him was a harder thing than all of the other things that would happen. That time it was the hand came down on me. He begged God, kill me, don't kill the child. Sfono says he's referring, you don't need to reprove me anymore. You don't need to torture me anymore because I've already gotten it all. Ein miton bifsari mipnei zamecha. There isn't a whole spot in my flesh because of your rage. Ein shalom be'atzamai. There is no peace in my bones. So we have a dispute among the commentaries who say it's the bones, and it's saying more or less the same thing. There's no whole place in this. I haven't got a whole bone. But the word etzem also means atzmi, myself. There is no peace in myself. In other words, it's not just that I'm diseased on my body, it's my sense of self. Mipnei chatati, because of my sin. I've had no peace, no rest, and I've had nothing but disease. Remember that David in his old age could not be warmed. And he's very, very, very frail at this point. And the beautiful, strong, vigorous warrior has become a shmatet. And here's what's happened. Ki avonotai avru roshi, for my sins cover my head. I'm drowning in them. Ki masa kaved yichbezu mimeni. Like a heavy load, they are too heavy for me to bear any longer. I want you to understand this is not only about Bathsheba. This is about any guilt he felt. And I want you to understand that there were enemies. Shaul tried to kill him. So, Jew was fighting against Jew. Brother against... It was a no-no win.
He understood there was no winning. But his greatness is that he didn't cover it up. And he didn't say it didn't happen. On the contrary, he actually publicizes it and he writes it before his death and he tells everybody what it is that he did. In other words, I don't need you to idolize me, but it's exactly what makes him such a hero. Precisely because he had all the frailties and managed to overcome them and rose above them and admitted to them and how he treated this. This is both maybe physical description, but it is also a description of how he sees himself. So what does he say? Hivish boash means it stinks when you have rot. The way it would occur, flesh rotted. Namaku is when they go into pus and they begin to run. So a chabura is a kind of a wound in which there is no outside bleeding. The bleeding is internal. It's a bruise. Now, if a bruise on the inside begins to get infected, you have an abscess until the abscess bursts through. How marvelous to talk about the inner wounds that begin to come out. So those inner wounds is, as far as he's concerned, the psychological wounds that he sees on himself beginning to go bad, stink, and are coming out pussing because of my ivelet. Ivelet is my stupidity. It's like the things I could have prevented. The things that eat us up, sometimes we have inevitable sins. You understand? Things that you cannot have changed. But sometimes you do things because you say, I should have learned. I shouldn't have done this again. I could have prevented this. How stupid was I? You understand? And that is the part that eats him up. And then he goes and says, Na'aveti shachoti ad me'od. Ivut is a perversion. Panim ivutim is when you twist your face. I've become twisted. Shachoti, bent over. True, his body had become twisted and bent over, as it would occur perhaps with osteoporosis. But there is something here that's much, much more than that. It is psychological.
He was depressed.
And I don't know if you've ever seen this. When people are depressed, you can see it in their body and the way they hold themselves. Neiveti, shachoti ad me'od, kol hayom koder halachti. All day long I walk around gloomy, particularly when the anger is directed against yourself, which is another way of describing depression. Kiksalai mal'u nikle. Now, I don't know what the translations do with this verse, so I want to hear this. Kiksalai mal'u nikle. There are some places where they treat the word ksalai as kidneys. Above the kidneys, you've got glands called adrenals. Ksalai is sometimes used to indicate your innards. But your innards are not in the sense of any particular organ, as much as the innards are those organs that regulate the operation of the body. We would think of this today as the endocrinological system. What happens if you're under tremendous stress? Your body, particularly your adrenals, produce a great deal of cortisol. Your heart begins to race. So, you know, when you've done something really bad and you feel really bad about it, your heart begins to go like this and you kind of like blush and you do all that, you have a visceral reaction to guilt, to shame. And you also have a visceral reaction to depression. Depression is not just in the mind. Depression is actually in the entire body. And it hurts. So he describes, my ksalim are filled with nikle. Now the question is, what is nikle? In some places in the Tanakh, nikle is used to indicate pus, something bad, rot, loathsome affliction. Malbim says that it comes from the word kalon. Kalon means shame. You see how the same word, kuflamet? Sfono says it comes from the word klala, which means a curse. And he says the reason is, he's consumed by shame and humiliation because he's been cursed. He sees himself as cursed. So the relationship between the curse and shame is that when somebody calls you a dirty name, what is our response? We've been humiliated. We've been denigrated. That's essentially what he says. I'm filled with that. And he repeats again the word, Ein mitom bifsari. There is no wholeness in my flesh. It's almost like there isn't a piece of skin that's whole. I'm diseased all over. He really wasn't. He was an old man. He was frail. He was cold. But he saw himself as diseased. Nefugoti v'nitketi ad me'od. Puga means weak, limp. I've become very weakened. And nitketi, and I am depressed very much. Sha'agti mina'amat libi. I screamed out from groan in my heart. And this time I have to share with you from the Malbim here. I want you to hear this carefully. I'm going to translate. I'm not going to read the original Hebrew. I'll translate as I go along. He is drawing this. He's painting it. I mean, metaphorically, he's drawing. The imagery is somebody who's at the gates of death. And he's in the process of dying. And his soul is essentially ready to depart his body. And it is common, he says, that when somebody is about to die, suddenly his entire body, his entire energy, moves towards the heart. This is, by the way, completely accurate. Anybody who's seen anybody in the process of dying, I can tell you that this is so. I have seen it 3 times. Now, there's a reason why. Your body tries to preserve the parts that need preservation. All it's trying to do right now is keep the heart pumping. So suddenly the heart, he says, has all of the strengths of the body coming towards it, and it suddenly flares up like a flame just before it extinguishes. You ever watch your candles Friday night? Just before it dies, whoosh, and then it dies. So you get this incredible energy. And then he says, there's a very interesting thing that happens. It's essentially called agonal breathing. They struggle for breath. And you get these like deep, deep breaths and these like groans. You hear these groans coming from trying to get air. He says, at that moment of agonal breathing, a person's life, past, present, and future goes to front of him. As he stands at the border between a new life and an old life and passes from one world to another. He says, and that's where it sometimes comes out as a she'aga. And there's suddenly this like last expulsion. But he describes it so well, and David here is seeing himself in the throes. And sometimes that process can last a day, a week, a month. It can actually stop, looks like everything's better, and then start up again. It did that way with my mother. Now, my mother could not speak. My mother, because of Parkinson's, lost complete control of her vocal cords. But my mother could utter Tehillim. And I didn't understand it. I spoke to the speech pathologist, and she said that expressive speech, that you're saying what you want, that's like she points to what she wants, she can't make that sound. But there's a different part of the brain. They can so with perfect clarity, my mother could recite Tehillim. Word for word for word, but she couldn't say my name. She couldn't say she wants water. My mother knew Tehillim by heart. And my mother used to say it like you count pearls. And what she was saying is she was saying the Tehillim that you say before death. She knew that. To the very end, Yoshev beseter elyon, betzel shaddai lonon. And that's why she spoke. And that's just like that word for word for word. She knew exactly what she was saying. But she couldn't say, get me water or anything else. She could not say that. So that two parts of the brain. And it was Rosh Chodesh. We davened. She asked me to daven. I davened everything. She held my hand. At the end, I sang hallel. And she held my hand, and she kept the rhythm, and everything was good, it was fine. And then I musaf, and if I didn't say it loud enough, she tugged at me. And then at the end you say, shir shel yom, and then you say, bon chinafshi, which my mother knew by heart. And that she said with me. And then I said, okay, Ma, we did it all. And I sat down next to her, and I held her left hand. And she suddenly took this deep, deep breath, turned around, and that was it. And I screamed, and she opened up her eyes, smiled, and looked at me, and died. He says, "Minehamat libi," from this groaning that's coming from my heart in the attempted breathe. Adonai negdecha kol tavati ve'anachati.
My Lord, you see, you know all of my desires and all of my groans. They're not hidden from you. Sfona says, all my desires, that all I really want to do is learn Torah and do mitzvahs. And all my groans, my regrets for what I did wrong. The two sides. Rashi says, no, you know me as a human being. You know my lusts, my frailties. Who knows it? You made me. You know what I've needed to struggle with. And you also know that sometimes as a result of those struggles and desires, I've groaned. I've come to regret them. They're two sides of an aspect, right? I want, but I really don't want. You understand the difference? That kind, and that's in front of you. It's not hidden. And as a result, libi schachar. When they say this heart, it also means my mind, myself. It is dizzy. I am dizzy. Azavandi kochi, all my strength has left me. Ve'or einai, gamhem ein iti. And the light of my eyes, oh, they're also not with me. Now, there is a grammatical problem here. Or is singular. Haim is plural. And the light of my eyes, they too are not with me. It should say, it too is not with me. Malbim says, no. My strength and my light, they too have abandoned me. What's the light of my eyes? It could mean my eyesight. Literally, it's my eyesight. I've lost my eyesight. I can't see. Who's the light of my eyes? Your children, of course. And the light of my eyes would be either the woman he loves, and they too are not with me, and not even my children. And now you'll understand, therefore, the next phrase. And by the way, in context, you'll tell me which is pshat. In the context, we can determine which do you think is the real meaning. Ohavai, vere'ai, mineged, those that love me, those that are my friends, they stand apart from my wound. Why? Why do people stay away from somebody who's sick? They're afraid. It's contagious. And if they know that it's not contagious, is cancer contagious? Is mental illness contagious? We stay away. We're afraid of it. We say, I don't want to see the person this way. Are we worried about the person's shame, or are we afraid of for ourselves? So those that love me and my friends suddenly can't be found. So they stand away from me. Ukhovai, and my relatives, merachok amadu, they stand far away. Vayenakshu mevakshe nafshi, and those that want me dead, those that want my soul, they stand there looking for a stumbling block. You know, let's turn off the machine. He's suffering. This can't go on forever. This is costing an arm and a leg. Vedolshei ra'ati dibru havot. Those that want me, want something bad to happen to me, they speak havot. Havot means lies, falsehood. Umirmot kol hayom yehegu. And they come up with all kinds of schemes all day long. That's what they... What was happening? Who's going to inherit the throne? And who's getting this? And what's in the will? He ain't dead yet, and they're already fighting over it. V'ani kecheresh lo ishma. And I, like a mute, deaf mute, I don't hear nonsense. He hears everything. He's acting like he doesn't hear. Uki'ilem lo yiftach piv. And like a mute, I don't open up my mouth. Either because he doesn't have the energy, or as sometimes happens, people are laying there near death. V'he'i ki'ish asher lo shumea ve'ein b'siv tochachot. I am like a man who cannot hear, and I have no reproof in my mouth. This is to reprove those that are around him that are saying, or prove his innocence. He's being accused of all kinds of things. Remember that they were already plotting his overthrow while he was alive. Ki lecha Hashem hochalti. My only hope, God, is in you. He's lost all faith in the people around him. Ata taneh Adonai Elohai. You will answer, Hashem, my God. You will answer whom?
What's he asking for? That he wants an answer. He means an answer. You'll answer for me for against all the accusations. You will answer against all the statements that are being made around me and all the plotting. I'll leave it to you to take care of it because I can't. I can no longer defend myself. I can no longer fight for myself. Ki amalti, for I said. And whenever it says for I said, it doesn't say to whom, it means I thought. What does it say? I thought?
I thought.
Of course. Pen yitzmichuli. Oh, lest they rejoice over me. This is called Schadenfreude. Happy to see somebody in their downfall. Bemot ragli alai higdilu. As I stumbled, they felt that they could rise above me. Why? Ki ani letzela nachon. For I am leaning, I managed to stand up only on a tzela. Now, a tzela is a side. So, Leah is limp, which means he can only stand up if he is leaning, and then leaning in a bent way. Umachuvi negdi tamid. And my pain is, I see my pain in front of me all the time. Ki avuni agid. For I will tell. Remember, he will not. He does not defend himself. He will not defend himself. He will not set them straight. He will not intervene in all of their intrigue. But I will tell my sin, and I am worried about my guilt. That I'm worried about. In other words, he's worried not about what they say as much as his accountability. Ve'oivai chayim atzeimu. And as I struggle, I see my enemies becoming stronger. Those that hate me increase their lies. And what do I see? Meshalmei ra'a tachat tova. Those that repay good with evil. It's not just that they're ingrates and don't say thank you. It's that I did them favors and they give me back stones. Yistinuni tachat rotfi tov. They despise me. They come to persecute me. When all I did was look for, pursue goodness. I told you that in Yerushalayim there was a rabbi named Reb Shmuel Salant. And Reb Shmuel Salant, when you came to ask him a shayla, on his desk, there was a bowl of little pebbles. People thought it was some kind of a schooler, and before you left, you were taking a pebble. They didn't know what it was, it's a good luck charm. Finally, somebody asked him, Reb Shmuel, why do you tell people to take a pebble? He says, because I know that any good I did, I'll ultimately get stoned for. At least let them throw little pebbles. So he ends with the following lines. Feeling utterly and completely alone. Al tazveini Hashem Elokai. Please God, don't you leave me. Al tilchak mimeni. Don't you be distant from me. As opposed to his friends, family. Chusha le'ezrati. Rush to my aid to help me. My Lord, my salvation. In other words, if you can't help me in this world, at least in the next. And that's how it ends.